good evening, everybody. Mike Malloy here. Thanks for tuning in. I got an email today from Jan in California, and I read it, and it really, I mean, just absolutely freaked me out. So I sent copies of it to two people whose opinions I respect, and I will share with you Jan's email first, and then what I got in return. It has to do with this disaster in the Gulf of Mexico. But first, email from Kathy, also known as the Maine Coyote. She writes, Mike, did you hear the chairman of the board of BP said today about caring for the small people? Yeah. Yeah, I heard that. You know, I want to assume that that was a mistranslation. You know, the guy is Swedish, I think. And he was trying to use idiomatic English, American English, and it didn't quite work. But even so, even if he would have had the right word, the little people, the small people, the unimportant, there's no way to talk about Americans in the diminutive sense in this disaster. And for this arrogant bastard to do it was just about push me over the edge. Kathy writes, what is it with these guys? Putting Typhoid Tony in front of the congressional panel tomorrow should be equally funny. Yeah, funny if it weren't so crushingly sad. They are truly the architects of a mass extinction. Maybe we should pray to that sky ghost for our kids and whatever the hell kind of life we're leaving them. And yeah, I'm uber bummed at this point. Kathy, the Maine Coyote. I also got a couple of links to stories in Mother Jones online, motherjones.com, a magazine I've subscribed to now for probably, oh, hell, I don't know, 35 years. I remember when Michael Moore was the managing editor there. But Mother Jones, a couple of their writers have been doing some investigative work where it concerns this disaster. A couple of things I want to share with you. Mac McClelland, who is a writer for Mojo, apparently has somebody on the inside at British Petroleum who is keeping him posted. I don't mean a corporate dude. I mean somebody who works there, somebody who's working on the cleanup. Anyway, Mac writes for Mother Jones, more dirty details from my BP mole. He writes, you know the story. Boy calls girl. Girl goes to pick up boy. Boy and girl go sit on a beautiful beachside deck to enjoy the night, feel the breeze, and listen to the waves crash as he tells her a bunch of terrible things that are going on at an oil spill cleanup site. Yes, I had a date with Elmer, my mole inside BP's cleanup operation, and he painted a grim picture of the conditions for both workers and wildlife at Louisiana's Elmer's Island Wildlife Refuge. First, the workers. The men on Elmer's Island don't wear respirators since BP and OSHA have thrown precaution to the wind and deemed them unnecessary. But the only type of air monitoring equipment Elmer's ever seen on the island are little multi-gas meters that are not really up to the job. They're designed for indoor use, they clog easily, and only measure limited types of pollutants. And despite the known dangers of dispersants and the toxic chemicals in crude, I can attest that contact with the stuff washing up on the beach can burn. Workers aren't even wearing protective Tyvek suits anymore. Of course, there are medics on hand to treat anyone who gets hurt or sick. Unfortunately, any worker who asks for a medic's help is automatically drug tested, which for some can be a powerful incentive to not report injuries. Not that keeping a cleanup job necessarily equals getting paid. Elmer says the contractors continue to lose workers' paychecks, a problem he told me about the last time we talked and that has since been confirmed by the local newspapers. Anyway, cleanup workers on these South Louisiana beaches aren't the only ones who could use more protections. What Elmer told me echoed the reports that BP isn't exactly doing everything in its power to keep track of the toll the spill is taking on wildlife. In nearby Port Fourchon, where he also has worked, there are markers to denote wildlife nesting areas, but they aren't clearly labeled, and no one knows what they mean. So workers drive and trample over sensitive habitats. One day last week, Elmer and his co-workers came upon eight oiled pelicans. But though they called the official number to report their findings, no one had come to collect the birds by the time his shift ended many hours later. A representative from the Louisiana Department of Wildlife and Fisheries has yet to respond to my request for comment. Workers on Elmer's have not been instructed to report dead animals for collection or autopsy. Elmer said he'd recently come upon a dead crab and, knowing no one is going to come to examine it, decided to slice it open himself. Black oil poured out. I've seen some pathetic excuses for cleanup out here. Were the workers on Elmer's at least making some progress? Elmer, my contact, said, quote, "They're not. They're not being effective out here. 2 days after your article, they bust in twice as many workers. So they're up to 120 guys on Elmer's Island now, but I can't see any considerable difference. They're only working 5 sites, and it's 8 miles of beach. No one seems concerned about cleaning it up. The contractors are getting their money. They don't care. They've got all these people out there, but they're not accomplishing anything." End quote. Oh, wait. Not nothing. Elmer says, quote, "They brought in prostitutes." End quote. No one knows who the "they" that brought in the pack of hookers is, but the gals have definitely arrived, and you can buy time with one for $200. It only took someone a whole month even to figure out that it would be lucrative to sell sex to guys earning 44 hours of overtime a week and living in camps and converted 18-wheelers. This is sent to me by Dot in Seattle. And there's another one from Mother Jones. Mac McClellan, of course, I think, is female. So Mac has another one also sent to me by Dot in Seattle that I will share with you in a moment. And also at Mother Jones, Julia Whitley, or Whitty, writing at Mother Jones, has some questions that she got from a forum of geologists and oil professionals that has the science community buzzing. And the question being debated is this British Petroleum gusher unstoppable? Is it absolutely unstoppable? And then the third thing that I want to share with you is a report that's circulating from the Russians. If you need to take that with a grain of salt, I certainly understand. The Russian we're talking about is Anatoly Mikhailovich Segalevich. He's a Russian explorer who works at the Shirasov Institute of Oceanology of the Russian Academy of Sciences. It was the Soviet Academy of Sciences until 1991. He's been there since 1965. Since 1979, he's the director of the Russian Deepwater Submersibles Laboratory. And he's degreed in this and that. He also holds the world record for the deepest freshwater dive at 5,371 feet in Lake Baikal aboard a Pisces submersible back in 1990. And he's got, you can Wikipedia him, Segalevich, Sagalevich. He has something to say that I'll share with you in a little bit. This is Not a Pretty Princess Day, by any means. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy.
Whoa. When I opened my mouth, out came bear. And the anchorman was saying, blah, blah. And I replied, bear, bear. And the anchor woman was saying, blah, blah. And I replied, bah, bah. Then I remembered, electronic media creates reality. Electronic media.
Mike Malloy.
It is 21 past the hour. The second little bit from Mac McClellan at mojo.com. Mac writes, you know, Isle Grande Terre, Louisiana, from the unbelievable pictures of oiled birds taken there last week. It's also the island just to the east of Grand Isle, which I've been reporting on since oil made landfall there several weeks ago. I wanted to check up on Grand Terre, and so to get there and avoid a BP escort, yesterday I got in a kayak with my intrepid former literature professor from the University of New Orleans and paddler extraordinaire, Dr. John Haslett. On the way, we beached ourselves on an uninhabited spit near Grand Isle State Park. It was completely covered in oil, and there were no cleanup crews in sight. Nor was there any boom across Barataria Pass, which is a gateway to wetlands. After a while, a Louisiana Department of Wildlife and Fisheries employee, trailing half a dozen big and tall men behind her, appeared. She flagged us down and told us nobody should be walking on that beach because it was a wildlife reserve, which, considering the amount of oil, massive, and level of cleanup taking place, none, was pretty alarming. Plus, as a big guy next to her wearing a shirt from ESNH, the main cleanup contractor here, said, we don't need this on camera, which is why BP's contractors have their workers on a gag order. Because sometimes they say stupid stuff like that. We paddled on and pulled up on Grand Terre, where the oil stretched as far as we could see in deep, dark pools. We encountered a cleanup crew supervisor gunning around on his ATV, who said there were all of 30 workers on the whole island, which he said is 5 miles long. For the hour we walked around, only 3 of them were working anyway, while the rest sat in the shade. And the work consisted of somewhat haphazardly laying down paper towels. Clarification. Though the workers referred to them as paper towels, they are indeed slightly thicker, oil-absorbent pads, as several commenters have pointed out. Since that wouldn't be clear to everyone from the pictures, I definitely should have been less cheeky and more specific. These are very fancy paper towels that a few dudes are dropping along the shore to combat the multi-million gallon spill. Also, we found a dead dolphin. That was about all we could take, what with the heat index of 105 and the rowing we had to do to go back to Grand Isle, and I was already getting a little woozy. At least I kept my wits enough about me to remember to keep my mouth closed when waves splashed water thick with oil into my face. I suppose the 60-year-old dolphins swimming the pass with us don't have that option. Things got a little more depressing in the kayak when we saw that they were blowing it out through their holes. They'd probably like to take one double scrubbing down with dishwashing liquid, like we took when we got home. From Mac McClellan, writing at mojo.com. And Julia Whitty, who is also a writer for Mother Jones, has an interesting, interesting, Jesus God, the language is getting less and less applicable the more and more this oil gusher disaster goes on. But a writer at Science Blogs, Sharon Astick, points the way to a seriously scary comment thread at the oil drum. That's a sounding board for, among others, many petroleum geologists and oil professionals. You should check out the oil drum if you haven't gone there. The comment in question is from a seemingly very knowledgeable person. Some of it will follow verbatim below. And Julia, writing at Mother Jones, has highlighted the parts that frightened me the most and left me wondering, is this why Obama's praying? The first comment, because we have a break coming here, the first comment is simply, this is from the oil drum, all the actions and a few tidbits of information all lead to one inescapable conclusion. The well pipes below the seafloor are broken and leaking. Now you have some real data of how BP's actions are evidence of that, as well as some murky statements from BP officials confirming the same. To those of us outside the real inside loop, yet still fairly knowledgeable, the failure of Topkill was a major confirmation of what many feared, that the system below the seafloor has serious failures of varying magnitude in the complicated chain, and it is breaking down and will continue to do so. What does this mean? I'll share it with you when we come back. And it means some stuff you don't want to hear. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy.
Stand back. Here come 50,000 watts of free speech. It's Mike Malloy.
It is 25 before the hour. So Julia Whitty, writing today at mojo.com, she's been checking a couple of the more pertinent blogs and websites about this. Science blogs is one. The Oil Drum is another. And she has, in some of these discussions, online discussions, the following. To those of us outside the real inside loop, yet still fairly knowledgeable, the failure of Topkill was a major confirmation of what many feared, that the system below the seafloor has serious failures of varying magnitude in the complicated chain, and it is breaking down and will continue to break down. So what does this mean? It means they will never cap the gusher after the wellhead. They cannot. The more they try and restrict the oil gushing out of the BOP, the more it will transfer to the leaks below, just like a leaky garden hose with a nozzle on it. When you open up the nozzle, it doesn't leak so bad. You close the nozzle, it leaks real bad. Same dynamic. It is why they sawed the riser off, or tried to anyway. But they clipped it off to relieve pressure on the leaks down the hole. I'm sure there was a bit of panic after they crimped or pinched off the large riser pipe and the diamond wire saw got stuck and failed, because that crimp diverted pressure and flow to the rupture down below. Contrary to what most of us would think is logical to stop the oil mess, actually opening up the gushing well and making it gush more became the direction BP took after confirming that there was a leak. In fact, if you note their actions, that should become clear. They have shifted from stopping or restricting the gusher to opening it up and catching it. This only makes sense if they want to relieve pressure at the leak hidden down below the seabed. And that sort of leak is one of the most dangerous and potentially damaging kinds of leak there could be. It is also inaccessible, which compounds our problems. There is no way to stop that leak from above. All they can do is relieve the pressure on it, and the only way to do that right now is to open up the nozzle above the gush so more oil comes into the Gulf and hopefully catch it, which they have done, if they have done, they just neglected to tell us. A downhole break, that's one below the wellhead, is dangerous and damaging for several reasons. There will be erosion throughout the entire beat-up, beat-on, and beat-down remainder of the system, including that inaccessible leak. The same erosion I spoke about in the first post is still present and has never stopped, cannot be stopped, is impossible to stop, and will always be present in and acting on anything that is left which has crude oil product rushing through it. There are abrasives still present. Swirling flow will create hot spots of wear, and this erosion is relentless and will always be present until eventually it wears away enough material to break its way out. It will slowly eat the BOP away, especially at the now pinched off riser head, and it will flow more and more. Perhaps BP can outrun or keep up with that outflow with various suckage methods for a period of time, but eventually the well will win that race. Just how long will that race be? No one really knows. However, now there are other problems that a downhole leak will and must produce that will compound this already bad situation. This downhole leak will undermine the foundation of the seabed in and around the well area. It also weakens the only thing holding up the massive blowout preventer, the BOP's immense bulk of 450 tons. In fact, we're beginning to see the results of the well's total integrity beginning to fail due to the undermining being caused by the leaking wellbore. The first layer of the seafloor in the Gulf is mostly loose material of sand and silt. It doesn't hold up anything and isn't meant to. What holds up the entire subsea system of the blowout preventer in place is the well itself. The well's piping, in comparison, is actually very much smaller than the blowout preventer, and strong as it may be, it relies on some support from the seabed to function and not literally fall over. And it is now showing signs of doing just that, falling over. So what is likely to happen now? Well, none of what is likely to happen is good. In fact, it's about as bad as it gets. I'm convinced the erosion and compromising of the entire system is accelerating and attacking more key structural areas of the well. The blowout preventer and surrounding strata holding it all up and holding it together. This is evidenced by the tilt of the blowout preventer and the erosion which has exposed the wellhead connection. What eventually will happen is that the blowout preventer will literally tip over if they do not support it, if they do not run supports to it as the currents push on it. I suspect they will run those supports as cables tied to anchors very soon. If they don't, they are inviting disaster that much sooner. Eventually, though, even that will be futile as the well casings cannot support the weight of the massive system above without the cement bond to the earth. And that bond is being eroded away. When enough is eroded away, the casings will buckle, and the blowout preventer will collapse the well. If and when you begin to see oil and gas coming up around the well area from under the blowout preventer, or the area around the wellhead connection and casing sinking more and more rapidly, it won't be too long after that that the entire system fails. BP must be aware of this. They are mapping the seafloor sonically, and that is not a mere exercise. Our government must be well aware of this, too. They're just not telling us. All of these things lead to only one place, a fully wide-open wellbore directly to the oil deposit. After that, it goes into the realm of the worst things you can think of. The well may come completely apart as the inner liners fall. There is still a very long drilling string in that well that could literally come flying out. As I said, all the worst things you can think of are a possibility, but the very least damaging outcome, as bad as it is that we are stuck with a wide open gusher blowing out 150,000 barrels a day of raw oil or more. There isn't any cap dome or any other suck fixer device on Earth that exists or could be built that will stop it from gushing out and doing more and more damage to the Gulf, while at the same time also doing more damage to the well, making the chance of halting it with a kill from the bottom up less and less likely to work, which, as it stands now, is the only real chance we have to stop it at all. It's a race now. A race to drill the relief wells and take our last chance of killing this monster before the whole weakened, worn-out, blown-out, leaking, and failing system gives up its last gasp in a horrific crescendo. We are not even 2 months into it, barely halfway by even optimistic estimates, the drilling of the relief wells. The damage done by the leaked oil now is virtually immeasurable, and it will not get better. It can only get worse. No matter how much they can collect, there will still be thousands and thousands of gallons leaking out every minute, every hour of every day. We have 2 months left before the relief wells are even near in position and set up to take a kill shot. And that is being optimistic, as I said. Over the next 2 months, the mechanical situation also cannot improve. It can only get worse. Getting better is an impossibility. While they may make some gains on collecting the leaked oil, the structural situation cannot heal itself. It will continue to erode and flow out more oil, and eventually the inevitable collapse, which cannot be stopped, will happen. It is only a simple matter of who can get there first, us or the well. This is at MotherJones.com, and it was posted today by Julia Whitty, W-H-I-T-T-Y. Now, we can discount what is said by people who seem to know what they're talking about, or we can take it seriously. We'll be back. Stay with us.
Time for your humble and obedient servant, Mike Malloy.
10 before the hour. Now, if this were back in the bad old days of the Cold War, the Soviet Union and the United States, it'd probably be wise to just disregard what Anatoly Mikhailovich Sagalovich, a Russian explorer and scientist and yada, 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 is saying. But it's not the bad old days of the Cold War, but still, you know, you can make your own decisions here. Sagalovich, among other things, holds a world record for the deepest freshwater dive, 5,371 feet in Lake Baikal aboard a Pisces submersible in 1990. And he also was the pilot of Mir-1 DSV, a submersible that reached the seabed at the North Pole in 2007. The guy is, like I said, do a Google on, or I mean Wikipedia. His last name is S-A-G-A-L-E-V-I-C-H. But I got this from Jan in California. Mike, I just received this, and it has dire portents for the future. I Googled Anatoly Segelovich, and he certainly appears to have excellent credentials. Just sending on the bad news, Jan. And here's what it is. I'll get it started. We'll have to pick it up on the other side of the break. A dire report circulating in the Kremlin today that was prepared by Prime Minister Putin by Anatoly Segelovich of Russia's Shirsov Institute of Oceanology warns that the Gulf of Mexico seafloor has been fractured, quote, beyond all repair, end quote. And our world should begin preparing for an ecological disaster, quote, beyond comprehension, end quote, unless, quote, extraordinary measures, end quote, are undertaken to stop the massive flow of oil into our planet's 11th largest body of water. Most important to note about Segelovich's warning is that he and his fellow scientists from the Russian Academy of Sciences are the only human beings to have actually been to the Gulf of Mexico oil leak site after being called to the disaster scene by British oil giant BP shortly after the April 22nd sinking of the Deepwater Horizon oil platform. BP's calling on Segelovich after this catastrophe began is due to his being the holder of the world's record for the deepest freshwater dive and his expertise with Russia's two deep submergence vehicles, Mir 1 and Mir 2, which are able to take their crews to a depth of 6,000 meters, or 19,685 feet. According to Segelovich's report, the oil leaking into the Gulf of Mexico is not just coming from the 22-inch wellbore site being shown on American television, but from at least 18 other sites on the, quote, fractured seafloor, end quote, with the largest leak being nearly 7 miles from where the Deepwater Horizon sank and is spewing into these precious waters an estimated 2 million gallons of oil a day. Interesting to note in this report is Segelovich stating that he and the other Russian scientists were required by the United States to sign documents forbidding them to report their findings to either the American public or media, and which they had to do in order to legally operate in U.S. territorial waters. However, Segelovich says that he and the other scientists gave nearly hourly updates to both U.S. government and BP officials about what they were seeing on the seafloor, including the U.S. senator from the state of Florida, Bill Nelson, who, after one such briefing, stated to MSNBC, quote, Andrea, we're looking into something new right now, that there's reports of oil that's seeping up from the seabed, which would indicate, if that's true, that the well casing itself is actually pierced underneath the seabed. So, you know, the problems could be just enormous with what we're facing, end quote, Bill Nelson. Though not directly stated in Segelovich's report, Russian scientists' findings on the true state of the Gulf of Mexico oil disaster are beyond doubt being leaked to his longtime friend and former U.S. President George W. Bush's top energy advisor, Matthew Simmons, who U.S. media reports state has openly said, quote, Matthew Simmons is sticking by his story that there's another giant leak in the Gulf of Mexico blowing massive amounts of oil into the Gulf. On CNBC's Fast Money, he says he'd be surprised if BP lasted this summer, saying this disaster is entirely BP's fault, end quote. As a prominent oil industry insider and one of the world's leading experts on peak oil, Simmons further warns that the U.S. has only two options. Let the well run dry, taking 30 years and probably ruining the Atlantic Ocean, or nuking the well. Obama's government, on the other hand, has stated that a nuclear option for ending this catastrophe is not being discussed, but which brings him into conflict with both Russian and American experts advocating such an extreme measure before all is lost. And as we can read as reported by Britain's Telegraph News Service, quote, the former Soviet Union used nuclear weapons on 5 separate occasions between 1966 and 1981 to successfully cap blown-out gas and oil surface wells, which have been documented in a U.S. Department of Energy report on the USSR's peaceful uses of nuclear explosions. Russia is now urging the United States to consider doing the same. Komsomolskaya Pravda, the best-selling Russian daily newspaper, asserts that although based on Soviet experience, there's a 1 in 5 chance a nuke might not seal the well. But, quote, it's a gamble the Americans could probably risk, end quote. Reportedly, the USSR developed special nuclear devices explicitly for closing blown-out gas wells, theorizing that the blast from a nuclear detonation would plug any hole within 25 to 50 meters, depending on the device's power. Much as I had idly imagined, massive explosions can be employed to collapse a runway well on itself, thus plugging or at least substantially stanching the flow of oil. Now there's more, so stick around. We'll finish this up when we come back from the break. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy. It is 7 past the hour. This is the Malloy program. What we've done for the previous hour is share with you a couple of reports, two of which are, well, maybe all three, two of which are definitely eyewitness reports, what workers are discovering down on the Louisiana coast. And some highly speculative stuff that I've been sharing with you during the last segment of the program from a Russian explorer and scientist, Anatoly Mikhailovich Sergeyevich. The article was sent to me by a source that I trust, and that's the main reason. I'm not saying that the stuff in the article is true, but I believe that Jan got it honestly, and forwarded on to me. You can do your own checking, do your own research about this. But the gist of the report by Sergeyevich is that the damage that has been done to the seafloor in the Gulf of Mexico is irreversible. The gushing oil is unstoppable, and one of the ways being suggested to stop it is to nuke it, to drop a nuclear bomb into this area. Now, that is highly debatable. There are people advocating it that, in my opinion, don't know what the hell they're talking about, but neither do I. So I, you know, and I've got some response to this Sergeyevich report as soon as we're finished. Let me go back to what Jan sent me. Reportedly, the USSR developed special nuclear devices explicitly for closing blown-out gas wells, theorizing that the blast from a nuclear detonation would plug any hole depending on the device's power. Much as I had idly imagined. Now, this is the I here is the writer for the UK's Telegraph, the Telegraph of the UK. much as I had idly imagined, massive explosions can be employed to collapse a runaway well on itself, thus plugging or at least substantially stanching the flow of oil. Seafloor nuclear detonation is starting to sound surprisingly feasible and appropriate, says University of Texas at Austin mechanical engineer Michael Weber. He is quoted as saying that, while Columbia University visiting scholar on nuclear policy and former naval officer Christopher Brownfield wrote in the Daily Beast, quote, "We should have demolished this well with explosives over a month ago, and yet we watch in excruciating suspense while BP fumbles through plan after plan to recover its oil and cover its asset," end quote. As to the reason for Obama's government refusing to consider nuking this oil well, Segalovich states in his report that the Americans' quote, "main concern," end quote, is not the environmental catastrophe this disaster is causing, but rather what the impact of using a nuclear weapon to stop this leak would have on the continued production of oil from the Gulf of Mexico, and which in an energy-starved world remains the planet's only oil-producing region able to increase its production. On top of the environmental catastrophe currently unfolding in the Gulf of Mexico, the situation may be about to get even worse as new reports from the U.S. are confirming the grim predictions of Russian scientists regarding the oil disbursement poisons being used by BP, which are being swept up into the clouds and falling as toxic rain, destroying every living plant it touches. And as we had detailed in our May 23rd report titled Toxic Oil Spills, Toxic Oil Spill Rains Warned Could Destroy North America, end quote. To what the final outcome of this catastrophe will be, it is not in our knowing, other than to state the obvious, that the choice facing the Americans today is to either stop this disaster now by any means or pay dearly for it later. After all, is cheap petrol really worth the cost of destroying our own earth? BP surely thinks so. Let's keep hoping Obama doesn't. Now, again, you can take this stuff with as many grains of salt as you like. As is usually the case when there is an enormous amount of secrecy about what we're facing, as a country, as a planet, there is wild speculation going on all over the place. Now, a couple of responses. Bruce writes, I sent this to him and he wrote back in the subject line, 10 megatons of BS. He writes, a nuke would do exactly the opposite of what you would want to accomplish in the situation being described. If oil were coming up over many square miles, then a massive explosion would not seal the hole, but rather produce more cracks, even if it did seal a small area. The story also has a number of earmarks that tag it as internet BS. The casing is probably leaking, as I have suspected since early on, but that is why they are drilling relief wells, as is the standard practice when this happens. 60,000 barrels a day is an awful lot of oil. There's no reason to believe, though, it is worse than 100,000, or you would be seeing a lot more oil. If it were worse than what... If it were worse than that, they would be drilling even more wells. With the suspension of drilling, there are 100 rigs available. It only takes a few days to move one. In other words, nobody's drilling for oil right now in the Gulf, so Bruce is suggesting that if this scenario were even close to true, they would bring in more of these rigs to hurry up the drilling of these relief wells. Continuing with what Bruce wrote, they have not cracked, quote, quote, the earth. If that were possible, then earthquakes would produce these kinds of blowouts all the time. Although they think a massive natural gas blowout may have been released by a volcano in the North Sea about 200 million years ago, there is still some oil left in the North Sea. So it didn't drain the oil pool like all these doomsday scenarios put forward. And then Michael writes... when I asked him about Sergeyevich's analysis about what is happening at the bottom of the Gulf, Michael writes, "I don't know. First-hand observations do count. It's a 13,000-foot shaft into the ground under the sea, and if the casing at some point was improperly set or is now broken, the oil can move to places far from the drilling site. There are also several other rigs in the area, so who knows? Those could have been done just as shoddily as Mississippi Canyon 252 and have been leaking too. BP couldn't hide the leakage from MC 252 because the drilling rig exploded. Hard to hide that. In talking to drillers here, those paths show up mostly when slant drilling. One doesn't always notice them when drilling straight down. It's a big world and lots of strange things can happen, so I wouldn't discount what Sergeyevich is reporting." And regarding the guy Simmons, whom I quoted in the article about Sergeyevich, Michael adds, Simmons is a pretty smart guy, but first and foremost, he's a banker, not a nuclear physicist, and second, an oil analyst. "I'd first want to see the documentation of the residual effects of blowing out a well with a nuke before saying it's a good thing." Stay with us. We'll be back.
Malloy.
21 past the hour. You know, let me say again that you know, while I certainly trust the sources that send me stuff, neither the people that send me stuff nor I have any way of checking on the original writing or article or column or opinion piece or science. There's just no way we can do it. And based on that, you know that the internet is either the greatest source of information in the history of the human race or the greatest dumping ground of crap, on earth, or both, probably both. As a matter of fact, it is both. So, I don't present any of this stuff as fact. When I first read this earlier this evening, it did. It just sent a rush through me of, you know, what I would assume is panic. I don't think I've ever had a moment where I've panicked, in my life. Not that I'm immune from panic. Jesus, no. But I don't think I've ever had a real rush of panic like I did when I read that thing by Sergeyevich. It was just like, oh my God. And again, this is what happens, doesn't it? When those responsible for providing information so that people don't panic, don't overreact, don't go nuts about something. That would be the government. That would be the company that caused this. That would be our erstwhile news media. There should be, I think, daily or hourly or once every 3 hours, a report on the status of this thing. You know, information is power, and lack of information is powerlessness. And, you know, power doesn't tolerate a vacuum either. If you are not being told about what's going on, something that may very well affect your life, then we become a fertile ground for all sorts of speculation, all sorts of stories, all sorts of insanity. That's why it is so important, I think, to keep a flow of information coming to the American people, which neither the Obama administration nor BP has done. The only thing we have is an endless picture of this crap erupting into the Gulf. That's all we've got. I mean, that's all we have. We have this damn thing on the television screen that just shows this bubbling mass of stuff going into the ocean. And aside from the rage I feel that this was allowed to happen, now I personally, I don't know about you, but I personally am beginning to feel extremely pissed off that we are not being provided the information that we need to have. That's not how corporations work, though. Corporations work on the theory that information is proprietary. Somebody owns it. Even if it involves the death of the, what was it, the 11th, 6th, whatever, biggest body of water on Earth, it doesn't make any difference if the information affects millions of people along the southern half of North Earth, southern coast of North America. Corporations don't care. Capitalism doesn't care. It's none of your goddamn business. That's their theory. It is none of your business. And this is where government is supposed to step in and say, yes, it is our business. But government doesn't do that anymore either. It's not just the Bush government. It's the Clinton government. It's the Obama government. It's all government in this country. It's their information. You know, I sometimes wonder, as long as we're thinking in apocalyptic terms, you know, supposing there is a huge meteorite heading this way, do you think the government would tell us? Do you think the company that owned the meteorite, and I'm sure some filthy capitalist corporation owns every meteorite out there, right? I know they do. Why? Because in that great getting up morning when we finally have the technology to land explorer but the robot ships on these meteorites and start taking out nickel and iron and copper and cobalt and fingernails or whatever the hell they're going after next, right? So probably all the asteroids are owned in the meteorites and everything. So when one starts heading this way for an extinction-level event, nobody's going to say anything. Oh, well, no, that belongs to interplanetary assets. We're not going to tell anybody anything. You know, that's our meteorite. Yeah, but it's coming here to kill us. Well, do something. You see how it can go. So this is what happens. Again, I don't mean to suggest. I present this stuff and try to present you with a rebuttal, like from Bruce and from Michael. But to let you know what is out there, if you don't already know, you probably already know it. But remember, the internet can be this font of information or a sewer of garbage, or both, which is what it is. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy.
Without dissent, it's not America. Here's Mike Malloy.
25 before the hour. Bruce writes, Drill Baby Drill, even if oil is leaking into a new formation that has a route to the seafloor, the oil could be pumped out the same way it is extracted from any formation. Once even one relief well breaks into the formation that the leaking casing passes through, the pressure would drop dramatically, allowing for a new top kill operation if the damaged well, like the one that failed. They also have a mechanical device for plugging wells that could be lowered into the well if the new drill pipe were attached to the damaged well and the drill string extracted. Damaged oil wells are repaired all the time. High-producing wells always need repair, so they know how to do it. This would just be a matter of reducing the pressure by bringing enough wells online. If they had been in Canadian waters, they would have been required to drill the relief well simultaneously. All right, so what he's saying, of course, is that, you know, once this relief well is completed, and I believe now they're drilling two. Once one of them or both of them are completed and they can start sucking up oil, it will relieve the pressure on the damaged well, at which point they'll be able to top kill it or cap it or whatever they do to it. I hope you're right, Bruce. I really do. That means we only have two more months of the gusher going into the Gulf of Mexico. Only two more months. And by that point, wouldn't we agree that, I mean, I don't know. Maybe let me rephrase it. Maybe somebody knows 2 months from now. Will this continuing gusher of oil have reached the loop current completely and gotten into the Gulf Stream and start polluting the Atlantic Ocean, which is, as far as I can tell, is the next step. And as far as being able to get these relief wells drilled, what happens, seriously, what happens if the well head or whatever the hell underneath all that rock, what if it collapses before then? What if? Reg writes, maybe if they told us the truth, it would sound exactly like the article you read from Mother Jones, and then there would be the same rush of panic as yours, felt by tens of millions of people, many of whom need very little to send them over the top to exercise their Second Amendment rights to get rid of anything remotely resembling the government. Stock up on good wine, Reg. I don't like this, you know. I really don't. I don't like the fact that pretty much for the most part, with the exception of the Israeli attack on an unarmed flotilla, this is about the only thing that I've talked about for, it seems like forever. It just seems like it's been going on forever, doesn't it? And I don't know how. Maybe you can email me a suggestion on how to break out of this topic, how not to keep talking about this. I mean, maybe what we should do on this program is just start the program at night with an update and let it go at that, instead of quoting stuff from Russian scientists, explorer, whatever the hell he is, who holds world records for deep diving. I don't know. If you have an idea, I wish you would send it on to me. I'm serious. Zeke writes, Mike, hearing Obama asking us to pray the other night was all the confirmation I needed that he knows something we don't. We are screwed. Big polluter, BP, started something they cannot stop. And Obama is looking at his Mayan calendar, shrugging his shoulders because he knows there's no 2013. USA, USA, USA. Zeke. Now that's funny, I think. Oh my God. USA, USA, USA. Damn right. Mike, I was returning from some errands a short time ago, and as I passed by another car, I noticed the bumper sticker reading, My son is fighting for your freedom. The man driving the car was oblivious to the impact his statement had on my mood. I had some drive time left to think about this, and things got very dark for me. On arriving home, I went straight to the cabinet where, for many years now, I've kept my radical, liberal, secular, socialist bumper stickers and various related paraphernalia. I hadn't opened this cabinet in quite some time. I searched through the leftovers of the many stickers that I had custom printed to express my personal convictions. I upgraded my vehicle a couple of years ago from a 17-year-old car to a mere 10-year-old model. Though I'd removed all the outward signs of my radicalism from the old car before selling it, I thus far declined to apply my inner feelings to the rear of my new vehicle. Why should I? We're in a better place now, right? With all the, I hate to use this phrase, with all the hopey-changey stuff. Well, I found what I was looking for, my old favorite, concisely expressing my feelings about our deadly occupations and boldly displayed for the last 5 years of Bush's reign of terror. I thought I could keep the extras for a scrapbook of memories. I remembered that I had ordered a bunch of these because they tended to disappear whenever I parked long-term. Some people had expressed a similar sentiment with the widely popular No Blood for Oil. I guess we may soon need to update that to No Blood for Minerals. So it was with a somber ceremonial air that I broke the moratorium on wearing my feelings on my bumper. I had to. The death rate for people like this poor ignorant man's son is spiking in Afghanistan, and it still hasn't stopped in Iraq. And I can't hold my public silence any longer, knowing it is not one damn thing to do with any freedom except the freedom of corporations to exploit and plunder. Rather than a bold statement, I choose to ask a bold question on my travels, one which haunts me as much again today as it had for the many, many years I asked it before. My bumper sticker reads, "How many GIs has your ignorance killed today?" It'll be quite some time before the sadness I feel from this circumstantially forced resurrection of dissent wears off. But it's nothing compared to what this fighting son's father would feel if he lost both his son and the ignorance that serves to rationalize away the real reasons he was sent to risk his life. His death would have no bearing on whether or not I had the freedom to put on any GD bumper sticker, unless, of course, I parked it in the wrong corporate lot. So, would you like a couple of my bumper stickers, Mike? I'm sure they get a lot of attention in your neck of the woods. Joe in Oxford, Wisconsin. I think I'll pass, Joe, because in my neck of the woods, and it is a neck, and it is the woods, a bumper sticker like that would probably bring an F-150 up alongside me with the huge wheels on it and some crazy son of a bitch sitting up in the cab saying, "Hey, boy, you like that nigger in the White House, don't you?" And then he would show me his gun. Thanks. I don't want the bumper sticker. From Alan writes from Payson, Arizona. "Mike, two thumbs down for my favorite president's speech from the Oval Office last night. Some of his remedies for the BP oil mess: prayer, God, and interdenominational blessings, none of which has ever in the history of the planet helped a goddamn thing." Alan from Payson, Arizona. Well, no, it hasn't. But, prayer, if it's used right, can be a form of meditation. Of course, you remember the book a couple of years ago, The Prayer of Jabez? What was that? Jabez? Remember where the so-called, what do they call those preachers? The prosperity preachers? We're telling everybody, look, Jesus wants you to be rich. Jesus wants you to exploit the planet. Jesus wants you to have lots and lots and lots of money. Don't believe the left-wingers that tell you Jesus was homeless and wandered around the Middle East with 12 men, a couple of whom were probably gay. Don't believe any of that. Jesus wants you to be rich. And then they have this stupid, it's from the book of Amos, I believe, just one line. And this freak, I forget the guy's name, don't email it to me because it would just make me get acid indigestion again. But he wrote this book about the prayer of Jabez, where you're supposed to pray to your sweet Jesus to give you lots of money and lots of cars and lots of vacations and lots of, God have mercy. George in Oregon writes, "Mike, just when you think they can't get any lower, along comes Orrin Hatch with his proposal to drug test everybody that gets government assistance. Sure, let's do that after everybody in Congress gets drug tested. After all, aren't they on the government dole? Or is it the corporate dole? It's hard to tell anymore. We could stipulate that anybody that doesn't pass gets thrown out. Just think, if everybody on Wingnut Radio got drug tested, with the ones that tested positive fired, you'd have hardly any competition. Hatch is a rectum among rectums. George in Oregon. Yow. Oh, is that a break? Okay, we'll take a break and be right back. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy.
When you're strange, faces come out of the rain. When you're strange, no one remembers your name. When you're strange, when you're strange.
Entering a flying monkey free zone.
I said, oh, watch out, I ain't lying. Yeah, I ain't gonna take none of your fooling around. I ain't gonna take none of your putting me down. I put a spell on you.
It's about 9 before the hour. If you like to call in, we'll put you on the air. The number is 877-996-2556. From K. Subject line is two lines. Sure, it's hi, Mike. The opening and closing of Obama's speech did it for me. The opening line, abroad, our brave men and women in uniform are taking the fight to Al-Qaeda wherever it exists. End quote. Really? Is that what it's all about? Fighting Al-Qaeda with the news about the minerals in Afghanistan that was revealed over the weekend and the ongoing occupation of Iraq? Does he really expect us to buy this crap? Isn't this the same garbage the Bush crime family fed us? And the last line, quote, may God bless the United States of America, end quote. Kay writes, I want to tear my hair out every time I hear a politician close a speech with that line, which is pretty much every time a speech is given. Why should God, quote, quote, bless a nation that has been involved in so much death and destruction over the past 40 years and refuses to learn from its behavior? Oh, but I forgot. This is the God of flag-waving wars based on lies and Sean Hannity. Whiskey, tango, foxtrot. What a foxtrotting disappointment. I know what you mean, Kay. Mike in Garneville, California. The relief wells are not being drilled into the formation. The relief wells are being drilled to eventually intersect the original well pipe far under the seabed. When they intersect the pipe, it will pump drilling mud, then cement down to plug the well. Just saying, Mike. Okay, well, that's, you know, I think that's what the hope is. I think that's the engineering goal, the design to stop this. And Andre writes, regarding the bubbling mass on television, I believe the secrecy in the imagery being shown is to sustain fear in us. People looking around like ghosts willing to clean up toxic messes without protection is what is manageable to disaster capitalists. It's Machiavellian, isn't it? From Andre. And Tom in Joshua Tree writes, what to do? Well, Mike, how about reading the Tibetan Book of the Dead? It'll help us look on the bright side. The grave is only half full. Yeah, that's true. I read part of that years and years and years ago, back when I was reading the Seth Speaks series. Any of you remember that? Seth Speaks? This is back in the 70s when I had a brief yet intense love affair with New Age horse hockey. But the Seth Speaks books were based on the Tibetan Book of the Dead, and that led me to go to the library and get the Tibetan Book of the Dead. And like I say, I could only read so much of it, and then just went screaming out into the street begging for somebody to sell me another hit of acid. But one of the things that it talks about is to learn how to consciously dream. That's not a contradiction. The Book of the Dead, there's several of them, but the Tibetan Book of the Dead in the Seth Speaks series wanted you to know that when you die, it is like being in a dream world. And that is the level of consciousness that you go to. And therefore, while you're alive, you should practice this every night before you go to sleep. Concentrate on how to dream consciously. And one of the exercises that was recommended, the first thing is to learn how in your dreams to bring your hands up in front of your face. That's all. Just do that. Learn how to do that. Teach yourself, no matter if it takes you 10 years, teach yourself how to bring your hands up in front of your face in your dreams. Once you've done that, where you can do it willfully in your dreaming state, the next step is to take note of not just be part of your dream, but take an observable position in your dreams. Notice things. Notice details. And then the third step is to, when you're dreaming and other people are in your dream, actually, and this is the part, this is where I closed the book and left, approach people in your dreams and start talking to them and just say to them, hi, my name's Mike. Well, whatever your name is, you wouldn't say it if your name is Mary, but, you know, hi, my name's Mike, and welcome to my dream. You know, this is my dream, and I thought I'd come over and introduce myself. Well, it sounds very interesting. Like I say, my flirtation with New Age hogsnout was intense and brief, and started with Carlos Castaneda and ended with Carlos Castaneda. So anyway. And along the way, you know, it was interesting. It was very good. I mean, I'm glad I made the journey out and in. You know, you have to do that, right? You have to make the journey on some level. Some people get there different ways. Some people get there by becoming a soldier and going into combat. Some people get there by sensory deprivation. Some people get there by having ecstatic religious experiences, davening and all that stuff. And some people just sit down and crack open the Tibetan Book of the Dead and read as much as they can. We'll be back after the break with your phone calls. Do stick around. I'm Mike Malloy. Welcome back. It is 7 past the hour. This is the Malloy Show. As you probably have figured out. do we have anything else that is pertinent to the continuation of this program? And I don't think we do. Oh, there's this down here at Fort Gordon, Georgia, which is near, let's see, Fort Gordon is, where's Fort Gordon? Hinesville. I think it's Hinesville, Georgia. It's down in southern Georgia where it's what we call below the Gnat line. The gnat, you know, gnats. Down there they call them no-see-ums. You can't see these little bastards, but you can feel them because they bite. So Fort Gordon is, Hinesville, Georgia is, or is that Fort Stewart? No, I think it's, I don't know. Hinesville, Georgia is below the gnat line, and people down there for the most part are insane. I mean, completely insane. There is no sanity below Macon. None. Zero. There are people who appear to be sane if you go through the small towns down there. And I'm not being offensive. It's just, I mean, everybody in Georgia accepts that. You know, people below the gnat line are crazy. That's where all the pecans, take your pick. It's where they're grown. And that's where crazy people live. Here's this story, which will prove my point. Sharon sent this to me. A former National Guardsman pretending to be a U.S. Army soldier convinced an officer at Fort Gordon to give him a sophisticated laser sight for military rifles before he was caught hours later on the base with a landmine, several grenades, and night vision devices, prosecutors said today. This guy's name is Anthony Todd Saxon. He's 34. He falsely pretended to be an Army Master Sergeant yesterday and tried to steal the infrared laser targeting sight. He was expected to be in federal court probably tomorrow. Saxon was wearing a full combat uniform, including rank and insignia, when he was stopped at Fort Gordon by military police and questioned about his activities. After Saxon gave them consent to search his vehicle, authorities said they found several grenades and the landmine. Oh, my God. He told investigators he was able to obtain all this after signing a receipt. He also said he was a member of the Army National Guard between 1993 and 1995, but was medically discharged for heart problems. They don't know why. No, Fort Gordon. I'm sorry. Fort Gordon is near Augusta, Georgia. Augusta, Georgia. A spokesman for Fort Gordon, Buzz Yarnell, said anybody can get on Fort Gordon with the driver's license. It's open to the public, basically. My. Now, what do you suppose he was going to do with that? You suppose he's a teabagger? We know he's insane because he lives south of the Gnat line in Georgia. So he is certifiably insane. But I wonder what he was going to do with a night scope and mines and hand grenades. Anne writes, regarding Obama's admonition to pray, Anne says, Mike, pray? Is that the Democratic answer to the Republicans' just go shopping? They're all crazy, aren't they? Ah! And from the Louisville Slugger, who writes, Mike, I'm listening to your show outside on my front yard patio drinking beer. Great show, by the way. My comment, when President Obama meets with BP execs this week, oh, he wrote this last night, 2 a.m. this morning, well, you know, sitting on his patio drinking beer. When President Obama meets with BP execs this week, my wishful thinking is that when the president and all the BP execs meet in the Oval Office at the big meeting table, that he, the president, would walk around the table with a Louisville Slugger baseball bat, kind of like Al Capone, Robert De Niro, did in that scene from the movie The Untouchables. But then again, I've been drinking, and it's hot here, even at night. You remember that scene? Oh, my God. Well, that would certainly get respect, wouldn't it? Can you imagine if Obama did that? Just walked up behind Tony with that Louisville Slugger. Just like in the movie. Huh? That would make Glenn Beck and every teabagger in this country just instantly wet their drawers. That would make Michelle Bachmann jump back in her spider hole and stay there forever. That would make, who's the other one? Palin. It would make Sarah Palin run back to Alaska and beg for her job back. And you can't charge a president with murder. Did you know that? You can't. The only thing you can do is try to impeach him. He is immune from prosecution as long as he's president. And in the case of George W. Bush and Dick Cheney, they're immune forever, no matter what they do. Cheney committed all kinds of murders. So did George W. Bush. So if Barack Obama would just do one with a baseball bat, like in the movie, I don't know. But you got a frown on your face. Can't hear you.
Well, they tried Clinton civilly while he was sitting.
Oh, that was a civil lawsuit.
You just can't be tried criminally.
You can sue the president. Sure, you can sue anybody. But you can't charge him with criminal stuff. Jake writes from the Warner Robins newspaper, Warner Robins, Georgia. Jake writes, Fort Gordon is just outside Augusta in the central Savannah River area. Hinesville is near Fort Stewart, near Savannah. That's right. Love to listen to your show, though the subject matter can be depressing at times. I work in Warner Robins, a truly military gung-ho town filled with end-times fanatics masquerading as Baptists. No amount of prayer can help with that. Stay on as long as you can, man. Jake, you dated somebody from Warner Robins, didn't you? Not someone from Warner Robins, but one of your boyfriends was in the military.
Yeah, sadly, that was another relationship that ended in a restraining order, as so many of mine were wont to do, being in the South.
That's true. That's very true.
And down here, we either marry him or have him arrested.
Have him arrested. You're damn right. Kate wants to know, regarding the Louisville Slugger, would it be wood or aluminum? She loves the crack of wood. You people are losing it.
But you heard the one about Batty Michelle Bachmann, though, right?
Today? No. What does she do now?
Oh, you need to look it up during the break. Look it up during the break. That'll be a nice little tease for the audience.
Okay.
Everybody go Google Michelle Bachmann. She's gone off her little libertarian teabag tirade.
Yeah, well, I wish she would crawl back into her spider hole. God, I hate these people. They're just so pointless. You know, the big issue in so many forums right now is whether or not Prop 8 in California was legal or illegal. You know, that's the one denying people the right to get married. And the Mormon Church has been found, apparently, to have lied on several occasions. I've got that here someplace. So the Mormon Church now, the official position of the Mormon Church is that they are a bunch of filthy liars. We'll be right back.
Staying alive. Hey girl, we gotta get out of here.
loud, proud, progressive talk. It's Mike Malone.
Twenty-one past the hour. Who we got here? Dell in Freeport, Illinois. Hey, Dell.
Hi there, Mike. Long-time listener. I remember you way back when you were broadcasting in Chicago.
Yeah, that was a different lifetime, right?
Yes, sir. I assume for both of us.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm with the Rockford Coffee Party. And on July 19th, we're planning on protesting in front of the EP America corporate headquarters. Most folks aren't aware that the headquarters building is in Warrenville, Illinois.
Really?
Yes, sir. That's where the CEO, the CFO, and all the other three-letter SOBs have their offices and where they conduct their business and where they make their decisions.
Huh.
We've got all these. Just as an anecdote, it happens to be right off of the Ronald Reagan Memorial Tollway in northern Illinois. We're planning on going out there on July 19th. We're going to have a rally in nearby Cerny Park in Warrenville. And we've already approached, although nothing's been confirmed, none of these things, when you try and do these things, nothing is confirmed until the last second.
Sure.
We've talked to the media liaison for Aaron Brockovich. I contacted the Sea Shepherd Conservation Society, and we've also talked to both the National Audubon Society and Greenpeace and some other environmental groups. And we're going to do this, July 19th.
Well, good. How far is that from the loop?
depending on how traffic is,
right.
It could be between a half hour and an hour.
And you're due west or north? Well, you couldn't be north. You're west of Chicago, right?
No, it's due west.
It is west. Okay.
Yes, straight out of the city.
Yeah.
It's north of Naperville.
Oh, sure. Okay.
That's exactly where it is. If you did a Google search for a BP America, you'd get their corporate offices in Warrenville.
Now, that's their American headquarters?
Yes, sir.
I'll be damned.
Most folks, that's how our media is today.
Yeah.
Because, you know, you've got these small groups protesting these British Petroleum franchises across the country,
mm-hmm.
and while that might have some effect on the corporation,
mm-hmm.
It's really not sending a message to the movers and shakers of the company, and we intend to take that message directly to them. And our media has been very quiet as to just where these people have their offices.
That's true. I'll tell you what, as things start to firm up, Dell, if you'll send me something in the mail or in email, I'll certainly remind people in that part of the country on the program.
Oh, no problem. We have a Facebook page. The Rockford Coffee Party has a Facebook page, and if they go there, they can see, they can follow how this whole thing has developed. Right now, we've started our application for Cerny Park. As soon as we've got that in our hot little hands, that's when we're going to really start going crazy with our invites and, lining up our speakers.
Okay. Well, keep me posted. Email me if you don't mind and I'll announce it as often as I can.
Yes, sir. Thank you.
All right, Dell. Thanks a lot, man. I'm glad you called in. Take care. Okay.
Yes, sir.
All right. The Bachman thing. Did you, Oh, okay. This is Michelle Bachman. Keith Olbermann was talking about this tonight. Michelle Bachman, is supporting BP. Michelle Bachman is a lunatic. I mean, a complete lunatic. You people in Minnesota who put her in office, you ought to be ashamed of yourself. Republicans are opposed to BP paying compensation for the oil disaster. Bachman said, quote, the president just called for creating a fund that would be administered by outsiders, which would be more of a redistribution of wealth fund. They have to lift the liability cap. But if I was the head of BP, I would let the signal get out there that says, we're not going to be chumps and we're not going to be fleeced. And they shouldn't be. They shouldn't have to be fleeced and make chumps to have to pay for perpetual unemployment and all the rest. They've got to be legitimate claims. That's from Michelle Bachman from the Republican Study Committee. Quote, BP's reported willingness to go along with the White House's new fund suggests that the Obama administration is hard at work exerting its brand of Chicago-style shakedown politics. Jesus Christ, these people are just insane. They're just insane.
Fun and frivolity with Mike Malone.
25 before the hour. From Jeanette, the subject line is Bachman Spider Overdrive. She writes, whoa, Mike, now I'm imagining Bachman's stupid head on that gigantic spider that stung Frodo. Perhaps we should suggest that image to a Democratic challenger, Jeanette. B.S., I sucked at science, but wouldn't you think nuking the ocean would result in, at minimum, the tsunami of all tsunamis? Not to mention the radiation. I don't think I'll eat anything out of the Gulf, regardless, because of the dispersants. I'm sure corporate America will bend over backward to assure us that nuked, dispersant-logged seafood is safe to eat until... gee, we start growing extra limbs and glowing. Even then, they'd say it was probably caused by something else, like homosexuals or socialists. Right. Oh, my God. I don't know how to go about mentioning. I got an email the other night about... our friends at headonradionetwork.com. That's the website, right? .org. Headonradionetwork.org. Bob Kincaid, who has been struggling to keep his program on the internet, and there are some serious problems. He's been one of the leading voices against mountaintop removal and against the destruction in West Virginia, among other things. I mean, that's not just his issue. He is ass-kicking progressive... left talk host. He belongs in the radio, but nobody hires anymore. So he has this internet program, headonradionetwork.org. Some of you who listen to this program are very familiar with it. He desperately needs some financial help. I know. But if you would, go to his website. Head on radio, as in head on, as in collision, headonradionetwork.com, and see what you can do, if anything. If you can't do anything, it's understood. I mean, there are certain programs that are available, though, that you don't want to see go away, as it were. His is one of them. I don't know what else to say, except if you listen to this program, you should support one way or another headonradionetwork.org. I don't know what to tell you. I really don't. I open my email every day and I see request after request after request from liberal or left websites trying to keep pumping out information that is not filtered through these psychopathic bastards in mainstream media, corporate media. It's a real struggle for all of us out here. So I don't know what to tell you except to just suggest that you go to headonradionetwork.org and find out what's going on. I don't know if Bob has it up there or not, but he needs some financial contributions in order to stay on the air, I think stay on the net, I think is the situation. So if you are so inclined, that would be a good thing to do. Again, as these voices are clicked off one at a time, all of a sudden this voice is gone, all of a sudden that voice is gone, all of a sudden, until finally what you're left with is the voices that corporate America wants you to hear only. So, whatever, okay? I just would hope that you'll check it out. Headonradionetwork.org. Bob Kincaid. You know who I'm talking about. Jeremy is in Burlington, Vermont. Hi, Jeremy.
Hi, Mike.
Hey.
Hi, I'm calling to address the issue that if you don't support the troops, then you can't, I'm sorry, if you support the troops, you can't not support their mission. But I want to know how people can still stand by that when we know that we're there for minerals and stuff like that,
mm-hmm.
and then throw in your face, if you don't do any of the above, you should stand in front of them and sacrifice yourself instead.
Well, what's the question?
I'm just wondering how people can still throw this kind of stuff around at you. I mean, we're clearly in Iraq and Afghanistan for reasons other than what we're told
right.
every single day.
Well,
and then people say, if you don't believe in this, then you should be the first to stand in front of our troops and protect them.
Right. I have no answer, because people who allow a family member to join the military in these times is a family that is saying to its family member, go fight and kill and possibly die or get grievously wounded for corporate America. Now, some people may feel that that's exactly what they want to do. So, you know, what are you going to do? But to equate service in the military in these times with patriotism is madness. It's dog slavering, rabies madness. There is absolutely nothing about serving in the military right now that has the least to do with defense of the country or support of mom and the flag and apple pie. That's hog snot. The United States military is being used to enrich corporate America, and it's sold on the basis of patriotism. So you're told, everybody's told, well, you know, support the troops. You're not supporting the troops. You're supporting corporate America that orders the troops to go places and kill people and be killed and be grievously wounded. It's sick. It's disgusting. To me, people who wanted to join the military, go through basic or specialist training, and then stay here so that if some maniacal country decided to attack the United States for whatever reason, and God knows there are probably some things we've done that warrant attack, but the U.S. military then would be here to defend and protect the country. But that's not what we're doing. You don't project your force based on lies, as we did in Iraq, or based on greed, as we did in Afghanistan, and then expect people to go, oh, yeah, well, I'm certainly patriotic. I support the, you understand? I'm sure you do. I mean, you know.
Yeah, I totally understand. I mean, 9 times out of 10, these people are just chicken hawks themselves that never serve under any circumstances.
Sure.
Probably run from the draft if it was to come up.
Oh, yeah, and all of them have. You take a look at all these, 99.9% of them are Republicans. Or conservatives, or teabaggers, which is all the same now. They talk a good story, but not one of them. You know, you wonder, when did Sean Hannity or Rush Limbaugh or Glenn Beck or these chicken hawks, when did they ever serve in the military? They haven't. Sean Hannity rips off the widows and orphans of dead soldiers. Glenn Beck dances on the graves of dead soldiers, and Rush Limbaugh mocks soldiers who return from combat zones. All of them are scum, but you know that as well as I do. So there's nothing you can tell somebody who has a family member in the military. A lot of times people join the military because it's a roll of the dice. They understand what they're doing, but they can't get a job. They can't get health insurance. They can't get their lives in order, so that the military becomes the employer of last resort. And people who do that, of course, are rolling the dice. They're hoping, okay, my unit won't get deployed to a combat zone. My unit won't get redeployed to a combat zone if they make it out the first time. So it's corporate America made sure that all the jobs would leave, and then they would have this vast pool of people that would have to join the military to go steal, murder, maim, and kill in other countries. It's really sick. It's just disgusting. Jeremy, thanks, man. I appreciate you chucking in. I wish I had some better answer to give. But that's it. I mean, there was a time, I'm sure, maybe in the 18th century, when or the 19th century, possibly, maybe, when the U.S. military was something entirely different from what it is now. You know, you have to even question World War II, World War I. I mean, you know, question it. It doesn't mean you have to denigrate individual acts of heroism that are performed in combat by any side. It doesn't make any difference. The Russians were heroic. The Nazis were heroic. The Japanese were individual, the Israeli Defense Forces, the Palestinians. Anytime you have a combat situation, it doesn't make any difference who's doing the fighting. There are individual acts of heroism, but that's not what we're about. It is 10 before the hour. Marty is in Texarkana, Texas. Hey, Marty.
Mike Malaw, you anti-capitalist pig boy, you. Anyway, look, the right says he's the devil, Obama. The left says he's a corporate stooge. I say he's a Maoist, 2 steps forward from 1 step back. What is it? Tell the truth.
What? I didn't hear what you said. Say it again, Marty.
All right. The right says Obama is a communist devil.
Right.
The left says he's a corporate capitalist stooge.
Right.
I say he's a Maoist, 2 steps forward for every 1 step back on the long march towards progressive hell. What is it?
I'm not sure. two steps forward, one step back on the long march toward what?
Progressive hell.
Hell?
Yes, your progressive hell.
What is it? What is progressive hell? I never heard that term.
The road to progressive hell is paved with all your liberal good intentions.
No, what is? What is it?
Always occurred.
What is it? What is progressive hell?
Your alleged equality of everything, which will never happen. There's no such thing as a level playing field.
The
one
what?
Team always wins.
The alleged what?
Your alleged. The road.
Oh, listen, Marty. I think you better stop drinking and driving. I really do. I don't know. I have no idea what you're saying, but. I don't know what a progressive hell is. The only hell that I've ever heard of is the, I mean, of course I've heard of religious hell, but the hell that has been created in the United States is the direct result of conservative or non-progressive policies. The hell that is erupting in the Gulf of Mexico is certainly not the result of progressive attitudes or laws or regulations or anything of the sort. The hell that is sending home thousands of grievously wounded young men from two wars that that conservatives got us into based on their lies, that's hell. I don't know what you're talking about, but again, I think you should stop drinking and driving. You're going to kill yourself, which might be okay, but think about the people you might take with you. So, get real, Marty, and stop listening to Limbaugh and drinking and driving. Jesus. I mean, you really need to do that. And by the way, when you finally do stop at a motel someplace for the night, if you want to email me a definition of progressive hell, I'd be interested in seeing what you're talking about. Ugh, creepy people. Kimberly is in Signal Hill, California. Hi, Kimberly.
Hey, Mike.
Hey.
First of all, thanks for a fantastic show. I mean, the little ray of reality in this crazy, crazy world, Mike. So I'm heartbroken about what's going on in the Gulf.
Mm.
And I want to do anything I can to stop it ever happening again. And so I went and bought a book called Oil by a guy called Tom Bauer. And I urge you to go and buy it, Mike. It was printed last year, and it details why this environmental tragedy has happened. This horrible little man, Haywood, he had a mentor called John Brown. Have you heard much about this guy?
Who? The guy who's the CEO?
Haywood, the CEO, his mentor.
Yeah, oh yeah, oh sure. I know nothing about him, but I certainly know who you're talking about, yes.
Right. So this awful man, in 1991... he was so persuaded by McKinsey, the consulting firm, that he didn't need to have any in-house specialty at all.
Mm-hmm.
So he got rid of them all. He closed down his engineering centers in Britain. He actually said, save money, you know, we can buy in what we need.
Mm-hmm.
He said that the engineers in Aberdeen, and these were guys, you know, drilling in the North Sea, he accused them of gold-plating everything.
Mm-hmm.
They were inefficient and wasteful. But best of all, there was a guy working in BP, and you can read his book, a guy called Hamilton. He said to him, it was a quote, because, you know, Brown was bringing in all these hired freelance engineers, and Hamilton said to him, if this goes wrong, there'll be no place in the world to run and hide. This was 1991.
Mm-hmm.
Nearly 20 years, bastards are being getting away with it. I'm so angry and upset, and I cry, and I don't know what to do, Mike.
Well, I certainly hear you, Kimberly. I think most people who can still think feel that way. You have people who are literally clinically insane, like Michelle Bachmann, and well, just about every Republican or conservative Yeah, I used to think they were just in deep denial about the reality of what we face in this country, but they're not. They're mad. They're insane. And the best thing to do, of course, is to stay as far away from them as possible. But normal people, obviously, like you, who feel badly about this stuff, I don't know what there is you could do. I don't know what there is I could do. Unless it was during the reign of terror by Bush and Cheney, if the people would have risen up and overthrown the government and replaced it with a government that made sense. And by make sense, I mean a government that will rein in predatory capitalism, make sure that predatory capitalism doesn't do what it's done in the financial sector, in the energy sector, in the military sector. They're destroying everything. And if we don't, either literally or figuratively, rise up to stop this, then it's we'll only have ourselves to blame, I guess is what I'm trying to say. Thanks, Kimberly. I'll see y'all tomorrow night. Okay, take care. Keep it lit. I'm Mike Malloy.
Are you burdened?